You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we take a look at a new congressional bill that would allow employers to require workers to undergo genetic testing or risk financial penalties. First, from the water we drink to the produce we eat, much of the water that enters our lives comes from underground sources. People rely on groundwater all over the world, and it makes up about 95% of the unfrozen fresh water on the planet. But these reserves of fresh groundwater could be in jeopardy in the coming years. For decades, cities have been pumping, in many cases, too much water from the ground, causing depleted reserves. And these bodies of water are vulnerable to pollution from industrial chemicals, farm runoff, and viral contamination. Our next guests look at the global state of groundwater in their new book, High and Dry, Meeting the Challenges of the World's Growing Dependence on Groundwater. William Alley is a hydrologist and director of science and technology for the National Groundwater Association. William, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. It's good to be with you.
And Rosemary Alley is a veteran science writer. Rosemary, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And Rosemary, let's start with you. Talk about this explosion in our use of groundwater really over the last century and a half as I read your book.
Well, yeah, and particularly after World War II with the centrifugal pump, when that became available for broad use, really seriously increased. I mean, as we say in the book, it was like trading in your Model T for a eight-cylinder Dodge Ram pickup. I mean, suddenly they could really start pumping large amounts of groundwater. And the groundwater pumping movement started in the developed countries, started actually in the United States on the High Plains and in California's Central Valley, but spread to the developed countries and then over time spread to third world countries. But in recent decades, the consequences of overpumping and contamination are starting to catch up with us.
And William, let's get into the basics of what groundwater is technically and what an aquifer is.
Sure. So groundwater is pretty simple. It's water that's stored underground in fractures or pore spaces or any open spaces that are beneath the ground. It becomes most obvious to us when we put a well into the ground and we pump water out of it. You can also sometimes see them in places where there's springs. It's oftentimes thought of as a static water body, but it's actually this. It's actually more dynamic depending on the system. And the aquifers are what the water stored in where it's most easily transmitted. So in some places it's very difficult to pull out the groundwater or it's poor quality, but our aquifers are where we have the best quality water and it's easiest to pull it out of the ground.
Yeah, and William, on that point, if we looked at the raw gallonage of groundwater on our planet, it would look like a really huge number, but there are a lot of reasons that a particular source of groundwater is just unusable or inaccessible. Can you talk about some of the things to just make different kinds of groundwater off limits for our use?
Sure. So it's a little bit, you mentioned the 95%. So the Great Lakes actually provide a good analogy there. I mean, you've got a massive amount of water, about 20% of the world's fresh surface water stored in the Great Lakes, yet you can only take a small portion of that out because otherwise you'd affect navigation or docks or water ecology, et cetera. So a similar type situation exists with groundwater. There's a massive amount of water, but if it gets too deep, it's too expensive to pump, or the water quality starts to deteriorate. If you pump groundwater, you affect streams and lakes and wetlands, so those have to be considered. In some places where you have the right kind of geology, namely clay, shale, rocks, you might have land subsidence. It really becomes a major limiting factor. And then along the coast in particular, but not just along the coast, you have saltwater intrusion where you pump fresh water and you start to draw in some of the saline water.
And Rosemary, I've seen articles about the coming disputes over water, whether we're talking about surface water or groundwater. These things are happening and have been happening already, right? Can you talk about some conflicts that have arisen over who gets to use groundwater and how much of it?
Well, groundwater is very poorly regulated. In fact, that's kind of an understatement. It's in many places, it's not regulated at all. And so where surface water, there tend to be very clear laws that designate who has a right to use how much and monitoring and so forth. With groundwater, generally, people feel or the practice is that what's, you know, what I can access from my land, I have a right to use, and as much as I want. So, of course, this is leading into a lot of conflicts as we're diminishing the resource, and there's, you know, a lot of stakeholders that are have a special interest in the resource. So it's gotten a lot more complicated in recent decades of who owns groundwater.
Talking about groundwater with Rosemary Alley and William Alley, their new book is High and Dry, Meeting the Challenges of the World's Growing Dependence on Water and Groundwater. And let's talk about the growing part of that, William. Talk about how much the use of groundwater has escalated in recent years. What kind of cities, mega cities, and other communities depend on groundwater now?
Okay. So it has grown a lot, as Rosemary mentioned earlier. No country on earth pumps more water, groundwater than India. In fact, India pumps about a quarter of the groundwater pumped worldwide, actually about as much or even more than China and the United States combined. A lot of groundwater development has taken place in drier regions, such as the Middle East and, this, of course, the western United States. But groundwater has pretty well been developed, and there are issues associated with it pretty much across the globe. And so even in nice wet places like Wisconsin and the upper Midwest there. So some of the cities that use, a lot of cities that use groundwater, some of those are, just to name a few, London, Hanoi, Tucson, Arizona, Memphis, Tennessee is 100% on groundwater. People might be surprised since it sits on the Mississippi River. So you can look across the world, Jakarta, Indonesia, many of these cities all use a lot of groundwater.
I want to get into some threats to groundwater apart from over-pumping. Rosemary, you mentioned that there weren't a lot of regulations in place to prevent over-pumping of groundwater. Are there regulations in place to prevent various types of pollutants and contamination from getting into our groundwater?
You know, I'm really going to kick that question to Bill.
I'm sorry.
He's really better qualified to answer that.
Go for it, Bill.
So I'll go for it. So, yeah, there are. In fact, at the federal level, groundwater is regulated more water quality than by water quantity, which tends to be more of a state-level jurisdiction. So EPA has a major role in regulating and monitoring groundwater. Department of Interior, a lot of federal agencies actually have some role one way or another in groundwater, particularly U.S. Geological Survey. And then the states implement a lot of the rules, like the Safe Drinking Water Act is a major groundwater act to help make sure that the drinking water, the groundwater that people drink, is regulated and safe. That's the goal anyway.
And Rosemary, can you talk about instances where, maybe in spite of regulations, we've seen problems with groundwater contamination?
Well, groundwater contamination is pretty pervasive. I mean, it's more of a localized problem. I mean, I feel like I really should kick this one to Bill, too, because he is the groundwater hydrologist, so I'm going to kick it to him. Bill, take
it. So groundwater contamination pretty much is pervasive around. One can think of it both in a toxic substances sense. So you have a number of places that have since become Superfund sites where people were mishandling inorganic chemicals, solvents and things like that. And so you have these plumes of highly toxic groundwater that have take a long, long time to clean up, and there's a lot of those going on around the country. And then there's the more maybe insidious problem of non-point source pollution where, you know, and that comes from more from fertilizers and septic tanks and things like that, where you have this pervasive amount of nitrate in particular, but not also pesticides and things like that that work their way through the groundwater system are a hazard there for drinking water, but also ultimately end up in many of our surface water systems like the Great Lakes or streams or rivers or wetlands.
Talking to William and Rosemary Alley right now. They're the authors of the book High and Dry, Meeting the Challenges of the World's Growing Dependence on Groundwater. Talking about the role that groundwater plays in our everyday lives, the dangers these resources could face in coming years. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about groundwater? Are you concerned about the future of groundwater in general around the world, in your community in particular? What would you like to see change? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to William Alley and Rosemary Alley about groundwater and the challenges it could face in the coming years and decades as pollution and climate change threatens this freshwater source. William is the Director of Science and Technology for the National Groundwater Association, former Chief of the Office of Groundwater for the U.S. Geological Survey. And Rosemary is a veteran science writer. They're the co-authors of the book High and Dry, Meeting the Challenges of the World's Growing Dependence on Groundwater. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about groundwater? What concerns do you have about it in general, in your community in particular? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller now. We've got Tom on the line in Brookfield. Tom, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you think?
In Wisconsin, you know, I think one of the big elephants in the room that no one really wants to address politically, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of intestinal fortitude to deal with it, is the explosion of concentrated animal feeding operations in the state. 10 years ago, we had 50 CAFOs in the state. We now have almost 300. And they're pumping groundwater at such an alarming rate to grow crops in sand and then to liquefy raw liquefied manure and sprayed across the landscape, and it ends up in our rivers and streams creating toxic algae plumes. But no one seems to really want to address the issue of just too much manure. They want to kind of address it in kind of benign ways, but no one really wants to confront it because it's a political hot button. But it's Dr. George Kraft at UW Stevens Point has been proving that the nitrates in E. coli in the private wells in the Central Sands region is really becoming a problem. Not only that, but Kewaunee County, we're having major problems with well contamination because of agricultural runoff and the lack of enforcement and management and regulations to protect our groundwater sources from these, you know, huge manure factories in America's dairy wasteland.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. Bill, agriculture, livestock agriculture in particular, manure, nitrates, and groundwater. Is this a big problem?
Yes, it is. It's a problem in many places. Actually, it's a major problem in Europe. The Danes and the people in the Netherlands have been dealing with this problem for a long time because they have so many pigs, for example, per capita in those countries, and it requires very careful management. Obviously, the sands that your caller was referring to are, you know, water moves very, very easily through those sands, and they tend to be less cleansing, perhaps, than some other types of environments. I don't know the exact situation of your CAFOs in Wisconsin, but I know that it is a problem in many places, and there are other issues associated with it too, in terms of just the high density of it.
Thanks for that call. And Bill, that reminds me, a point you make strongly in the book is not all aquifers are created equal. I think that might even be a chapter title. The rules that might apply to one might be very different in another climate and especially another geology.
That's correct. So where you would, for example, you have in Wisconsin there, you have fractured dolomite, which is a water flowing through the fractures. That's an entirely different system to think about than, say, your central sand plains.
Let's bring on another caller now. Gail is with us in Fish Creek. Gail, hi.
Hi. I'm really kind of concerned. I want to know what your guests have any kind of insight on it. With the Bush administration looking at removing all kinds of regulations that we've had to protect our environment, and water being a big one, and the that pact that was on the Kennedy Pact, I'm trying to recall what it is, about preserving Lake Superior as being like a body of water off limits from ever being tapped, and I'm concerned too because the whole thing bringing up Nestle going around the world and with their motto of clean water is not a right, and they're buying up aquifers and water systems everywhere, and for pennies on a gallon.
Gail, thanks for the call. That brought up a lot of points. The Great Lakes Compact is more of a surface water thing, so I think we'll set that aside. But Rosemary, let's get to her other two points. First of all, are you concerned that under the Trump administration, water protections might be rolled back?
Well, you know, it's almost assuredly people are concerned about that. In spite of the fact that Trump has said, you know, don't worry, we'll be fine with the environment, there's simply no way that you can just get rid of regulations and have clean air and clean water. They're just not connected, those two scenarios. So, you know, it's a question of how much, you know, how much regulation is important with groundwater, because it's so underregulated. You know, they got a long way to go before they're going to be overregulating groundwater.
And then the caller's other question, Rosemary, she was concerned about Nestle, but in general, companies buying up rights to use water, groundwater for commercial purposes. It's been a while, but it's been a controversy here in Wisconsin in the past, elsewhere in the world too, I imagine.
Well, I know of a case in sub-Saharan Africa where I believe it's Coca-Cola I think we're India. We're actually in India, yeah, where Coca-Cola has moved in, and they're pumping a lot of groundwater. And there's a huge social controversy about this because their water resources are very vulnerable in India. Coca-Cola has tried to sort of make up for it by doing some education programs and good PR kinds of things. But it's a real controversy. And, you know, we see this happening in many places. China, of course, is starting to get a foothold, or probably more than that at this point, in sub-Saharan Africa with the idea of turning it into their breadbasket. There are numerous examples.
We're talking about groundwater and threats that it faces around the world. William Alley and Rosemary Alley are with us. Their book is called High and Dry, Meeting the Challenges of the World's Growing Dependence on Groundwater. We'll take another caller. Dave is with us in Iola. Dave, hi.
Hi. I just want to know if your callers have any insight on the effects of frac sand mining on groundwater. I know when frac sand mining was first started in, well, especially Wisconsin, there wasn't a lot of testing done on the effects on groundwater or air quality, for that matter. Just wondering if they have any insight on that.
Dave, thanks for the call. So, yeah, there's fracking, and people are concerned about that. And then in Wisconsin, we supply a lot of the sand that gets injected into the ground in the fracking process, Bill. Feel free to tackle either or both of those, the impact of sand mining and the impact of fracking on groundwater.
Okay, yeah, so I'm familiar, but not enough to speculate much on the mining of frac. A lot of the frac sand for fracking comes from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I can see where that's a big issue in Wisconsin. I'm pretty familiar with the hydraulic fracturing. That's an issue that has a whole range of issues associated with it. There's been a tendency, though, to focus on the wrong issues associated with that issue. A lot of the biggest concerns related to hydraulic fracturing for oil and gas, unconventional oil and gas development, relate to spills at the land surface and things like that, and what to do with the produced waters, as opposed to contaminants somehow migrating up thousands of feet of through rocks thousands of feet. The other issue there is something called stray gas, which is where the wells tap into units that have methane, and the methane comes up the outside of the well bores and then may find its way into people's water. That's where you see people lighting faucets and things like that, although that can occur naturally also.
Dave, thanks for that call. We'll go next to David in Wisconsin Rapids. David, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if your people knew anything about the Superfund. My family is looking at moving down by the Anniston Army Depot in Alabama, and it was put on the Superfund for contamination back in 1990, and I have no idea about the Superfunds and how long it average takes to do a cleanup on that.
David, thanks for the call. Bill, I assume, like every aquifer, every Superfund cleanup is going to be different.
Right.
Are we fixing the wrongs of the past, though, with these Superfund cleanup efforts?
Yeah, so if I'm not mistaken, the Anniston, Alabama site focuses on PCBs. That was a PCB manufacturer. That was the PCB manufacturing plant, I believe, for Monsanto for many years. It's a very contentious area. I would look into that one because it's still ongoing. PCBs basically don't break down in the environment, and so they have to be either removed somehow or just sort of left in place. So, for example, this is surface water, but there's a huge dredging project on the Hudson, 200 miles of the Hudson River, to try to remove the PCB legacy from that river. So the EPA maintains a site that maintains all their natural, what they call NPLs, national priority sites, and I'm sure Anniston is on there. A lot of these Superfund sites have, no real end in terms of our thinking about buying and selling property in sites, so one would want to look carefully at it. Although maybe the place that the person's talking about is far enough away from the containment area. They're obviously not manufacturing PCBs anymore there, so I'd start with EPA.
David, thanks for the call. Just about out of time. Rosemary, basically, do we need to change our attitude toward groundwater? Have we been too freewheeling with it so far?
Yeah, we definitely need to change our attitude. I mean, that's why we wrote the book, was there's nothing out there for the general reader about groundwater. And most people are just sort of vaguely aware of groundwater, and there tends to be this attitude that, you know, if I need more water for my landscaping or for my property needs, I'll just drill a well and problem solved. And so we're bumping up against the end of that kind of laissez-faire attitude. So it starts with education and people learning about this precious resource that is definitely endangered, and changing our practices accordingly.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to William and Rosemary Alley. They're the authors of the new book, High and Dry, Meeting the Challenges of the World's Growing Dependence on Groundwater. Still time to share your thoughts over at the Central Time Facebook page.